Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, July 28th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Spokane police say they will check to see if supposed ICE raids with masked people and no ID are real or imposters. Spokane's annual Taco and Tequila Street Festival canceled as Latino community is under attack. And 250 protest Trump budget in Spokane and impact on health care. And as a furthering of the racist Trump agenda, we'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Spokane Police Department Chief Kevin Hall has released an all-staff training bulletin on how Spokane Police Department officers should deal with calls about armed, masked people in neighborhoods claiming to be federal agents and attempting to abduct a member of a community. The training bulletin, released July 15th, says officers should verify the identity of actors in apparent enforcement actions by asking for the senior member or supervisor and requesting details. The training bulletin came about a week after federal agents came to homes and places of work and arrested 9 community members who protested at an ICE facility June 11th in Spokane and allegedly tried to block the removal of 2 Venezuelan community members who were in the U.S. legally. At last report, the Venezuelans were still in the privately owned and run ICE Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma under extremely crowded conditions. According to the Spokane-based Range Media website, Police Chief Hall wrote in the training bulletin, as federal law enforcement officers may be using face masks, unmarked cars, and generic police gear while concealing and refusing to identify themselves, any individual may replicate this behavior with little effort. As community fear grows, it will likely lead to increased 911 calls reporting abductions, fights, or other disturbances, with responding Spokane Police Department officers being unaware or unsure of whether the incident involves federal law enforcement, criminal imposters, or other illegitimate actors. Since Trump took office in January and started using masked and unidentified ICE agents in his war against the immigrant community, there has been a number of reported ICE impersonations around the country that included attempted kidnappings. Hall said residents can call 911 and get the Spokane Police Department to respond if they see armed, masked people claiming to be federal agents and attempting to abduct a member of a community. The guidance says if Spokane officers determine the masked men are actually ICE officers, officers cannot interfere with federal law enforcement efforts. Spokane police would instead maintain public and officer safety with, quote, a level of tactical separation from the federal officers, taking only those actions necessary to preserve the peace and protect lives and property. They would also de-escalate tensions of all involved, provide clear, respectful communication to bystanders, assuring them of the Spokane Police Department's neutral role and compliance with the state laws surrounding immigration enforcement, and collect evidence documenting all witness statements, getting federal supervisors' names and contact, if possible, and logging the information in the local evidence system. Spokane police are instructed not to protect people from federal immigration agents, even if the abductions are illegal. Collecting evidence could be important to abducted people because people have disappeared into ICE detention centers across the country in the last few months, sometimes taken on unlogged flights to a concentration camp in El Salvador with no official record. Spokane Mayor Lisa Brown issued a statement saying, "We recognize the fear and confusion in our community, particularly around questions of which law enforcement agencies are involved and who is taking action. While the Spokane Police Department does not have the authority to intervene in the operations of federal agents, officers can respond and support the public by verifying if someone is legitimately identifying as a federal officer. If there are concerns about someone claiming to be a federal agent, our officers can be a resource to assist. Police Chief Hall said, if folks see a masked person trying to take someone off their streets, call 911. Call 911 if you don't know what's happening. The Nuestras Raices Community Center in Spokane has canceled its two-day Taco y Tequila Festival, scheduled for August 23rd and 24th, because of the federal government attacks on the Latino community. Nuestras Raices Community Center Director Fernanda Mascot told the Spokesman Review, "We just don't feel like it's safe right now to hold a Latino festival because we are being targeted right now." Mascot said, besides the ICE crackdowns, there has been a rise in hate rhetoric towards the Latino community under the Trump administration. The Taco y Tequila Festival started 5 years ago and drew an average of 7,000 attendees per day. Besides food and drink, the festival included music from bands across Washington and as far away as Texas. Each year, it raised about $70,000 for Nuestras Raices Community Center programs. Besides the expected income from the festival, Mascot said the Nuestras Raices Community Center has lost $30,000 in federal funding under new Trump administration policies. Mexican pastry vendor Isabel Varela, who runs Las Delicias de Isa, wrote in a statement, "We understand the decision was made due to the safety concerns tied to anti-immigrant threats, and we respect the need to protect our community first. However, the economic and emotional consequences of this cancellation are significant. It feels like a piece of our roots, our identity, and the space we've worked so hard to build in this city is being taken from us." And you're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman. On Saturday, 250 people gathered in Cali Park next to Sacred Heart Children's Hospital in Spokane on the South Hill to protest the federal budget bill's reduction in Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, food assistance, and other services, while giving tax breaks mostly to billionaires and increasing funding for ICE to $170 billion. The protest was one of 200 Family First events across the country Saturday. Many Manzanito House Immigrant and Legal Aid Director Sam Smith addressed the ramifications of the explosion in ICE funding.
"We are looking at an additional $170.7 billion in spending over the next 4 years, mostly dedicated to agencies that have demonstrated a consistent lack of respect for due process and the humanity of our community members, friends, and family. Rather than making needed investments in our immigration system, this law introduces new fees for a large number of applications for immigration status and for other humanitarian protections. This includes a $100 fee never before had for applying for asylum and an additional $100 fee for every single year that an asylum application is pending. That includes over $500 to apply for a work permit based on an asylum application, $500 for initial temporary protected status applications, and $250 for applying for special immigrant juvenile classification, an application that is available to vulnerable youth in our communities. It attempts to dismantle judicially mandated protections concerning the detention of minors and uses around $300 million tax dollars to fund invasive home studies for sponsors of unaccompanied children, sponsors who often lack status themselves, and to conduct invasive physical examinations of all children in ORR custody, regardless of age, to check for tattoos and for other identifying marks. This law provides an additional $28 billion to ICE annually, which gives them a bigger budget than the FBI, the DEA, the ATF, the Marshal Service, and the Bureau of Prisons combined. That is money that is likely to be used to fund 10,000 additional ICE agents. It's going to expand detention facilities, including family detentions, by some estimates expecting an increase to at least 116,000 beds in detention, up from 46,000 approximately now. It is, thank you. Oversight mechanisms that were already insufficient have been eroded at the same time that detention numbers are exploding and overcrowding has become pervasive. At least $14 billion have been allocated to reimburse partnerships with state and local governments, allowing local law enforcement to perform federal immigration duties. This includes agreements like what we see in Florida with Ron DeSantis' concentration camp, which is an affront to human rights and dignity everywhere. In Washington, thankfully, we have taken great steps with the Keep Washington Working Act to repudiate this as a concept. We must continue to support Keep Washington Working, improve enforcement mechanisms, and stay vigilant to ensure that our state and local law enforcement do not assist or engage in any federal immigration enforcement.
That was Manzanito House Immigrant and Legal Aid Director Sam Smith speaking Saturday in Spokane. Keegan Orban, who is a CV tech at Deaconess Hospital, also addressed the crowd.
The proposed Medicaid cuts are unlike anything we've seen in recent history. We've faced tough moments before, but this is different. This isn't a small reduction. It's not a temporary strain. This is a massive targeted dismantling of one of our country's most vital safety nets. Medicaid provides health insurance to low-income populations in the U.S., and because private health insurance premiums have become so expensive, many people on Medicaid would be uninsured if they lose their coverage. Yep. Yes. The Congressional Budget Office has estimated that 11.8 million Americans may lose their health insurance as a result of the cuts. And not only are they cutting Medicaid, but the congressmen and women that have pushed this big bogus bill have avoided extending current subsidies that make the Affordable Care Act marketplace insurance plans affordable. The expiration of these subsidies will result in premiums doubling for many people, and an estimated additional 4 million people will lose coverage. Patients will delay necessary care for fear of going into massive debt. In the cardiac cath lab where I work, if a patient ignores chest pain for too long, they could have serious long-term complications with their heart, or worse, die. Patients that need a heart valve replaced could die if they do not receive timely intervention. We saw it during COVID, and we will see it again with these Medicaid cuts. But if you think it stops there, that's just the beginning. Our hospitals and clinics will be among the first to collapse under the weight of these cuts, especially in rural areas and marginalized communities where we are already operating on razor-thin margins. Departments will shut down, providers will leave, life-saving services will disappear. And it's our families, not billionaires nor corporations, who will be turned away when we need care the most. These cuts are more than just budget lines. They are broken promises to our communities. And we are here to say loud and clear, we must put families first.
That was Deaconess Hospital CV tech Keegan Orban. Spokane Community Against Racism Steering Committee member Puyan Lam spoke about the racist project the Trump agenda has become.
This is a moment in history in which racial solidarity is of critical importance to our families and our community's well-being. We are all here today because of the well-being of our families is threatened. Racism, and white supremacy to be exact, is the biggest scam in human history. In Trump's big budget bill, we saw how expensive the price tag of racism is. $178 billion for immigration and border enforcement, all fueled by racism against immigrants of color. It was not a big, beautiful bill. It was a bill of mass cruelty, not only against immigrants and refugees, but also to all ordinary families. It is tragic that white supremacy got us where we are now. instead of funding food, education, and healthcare for our children, some people would rather have our government invest $170 billion in concentration camps and instruments of dehumanization. Thanks to those who fell for the white supremacy scam, corporations get away with their tax breaks and are going to make astronomical profits from carrying out crimes against humanity for our fascist government. It was a tragedy that for far too long, white working class folks fell for the seductive lies of white supremacy ideology that fooled them into believing that they have more in common with white capitalists than black and brown working class folks. It was a tragedy that they fell for the lies that immigrants, not white capitalists, were the reasons for their financial struggles. But for some of us, we have gotten wiser and can see through the divide and conquer strategy. In order for us to have a government that prioritizes the needs of our families and our communities and not the billionaires, we need to build a genuine multiracial democracy in the United States.
That was Spokane Community Against Racism Steering Committee member Pooyan Lam speaking at Saturday's Family's First event in Spokane, protesting the federal budget bill's reduction in Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, food assistance, and other services, while giving tax breaks mostly to billionaires and increasing funding for ICE by $170 billion over the next 10 years. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox contributed to this story.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by
Latah Wildlife Association, encouraging hunters to use lead-free ammunition for the benefit of their families, predators, scavengers, and the environment. Available online at facebook.com/Latah Wildlife Association. For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Listen anytime you listen. Everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing. When you listen to the radio.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Community radio.
Listen and you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight that radio.
It's 90.3 on your radio dial. Fight back.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your support. So keep on listening.
Fight back.
See y'all around.
We're still here.
Radio.
Still here.
Fight that.
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 After 1 year, Washington's first comprehensive bee survey has documented 15 species that have never been collected in the state before. The project is cataloging native bees, which includes nearly all species in the state but excludes honeybees. Carla Salp is with the Washington State Department of Agriculture's Washington Bee Atlas program, which conducted the survey. She says the data will serve as a baseline to track bee populations.
The reason why this is happening in the first place is to answer the question, how are pollinators doing? And the answer is we don't know because we've never actually looked at even what bees we have throughout the state.
Salp says the project also involves compiling a list of plants that each bee species pollinates so residents can make their yards more attractive to these beneficial insects. As honeybee numbers continue to decline rapidly, Salp explains native pollinators may become more important to Washington's agriculture.
Knowing what native pollinators we have and how we can support them is really a sustainability issue to make sure that whether we have honeybees here or not, there are options for pollination.
Volunteers collected over 17,000 bees on more than 600 different host plants. Salp says the process of identifying them is slow because each one must be viewed under a microscope, and there is still considerable work to be done.
We're expecting to find a lot more species that are either rare or new to the state.
If people are interested in volunteering, an online application for the Bee Atlas program is available on the Washington State Department of Agriculture website. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Waste from Idaho's agriculture industry doesn't need to go to the trash heap. In fact, it can help build more sustainable homes. Earthcraft Construction in the Treasure Valley builds homes from straw bale, collecting from the leftovers of wheat cultivation throughout the state. CEO John Clark says there's no shortage of material for his company, noting that wheat is cultivated in 48 of Idaho's 50 counties.
There's bales and bales of straw that go to waste every year, and the farmers either till it under, use it as compostable material, or some people will buy it maybe for some stables, for bedding, stuff like that. There's not a real big use for it, but you have to do it in order to make wheat.
Clark says building homes from straw bale is not a new concept. It actually has a history stretching back 200 years. Using agricultural waste from nearby farms also cuts down on the need to ship in materials. He also notes that straw bales capture carbon, and using them is a carbon-negative strategy. Clark adds structures built with straw bale have advantages over those built with traditional materials.
For this environment that we're in here, which is the Treasure Valley, a high desert, it is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal in all the aspects that you would want it to. Fire resiliency, insulative capacity, thermal mass, cleanliness.
Clark believes many people want to conserve resources, and he says that starts with saving the waste we already create.
They understand that, and they like to support that, but I think that they don't really know how unsustainable we have become as a society, as a people, as a country.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek has signed into law the first set of statewide policies in the country supporting community-owned microgrids. Microgrids are local, self-contained energy systems that use renewable energy sources such as wind or solar power. Dylan Cruz of Sustainable Northwest, a nonprofit involved in drafting the legislation, says microgrids can help mitigate the uptick in power outages caused by wildfires and extreme weather, especially in rural parts of the state.
We're seeing an increased interest from small towns, from communities, from tribes, saying, look, if the lights go out, we need to have options so we can continue to provide emergency services. We can provide communications.
Microgrids can power critical facilities such as hospitals or fire stations, operating either connected to the main grid or independently during emergencies. Joshua Bassafin with Climate Solutions says that while some microgrids are being developed in Oregon alongside utility companies, they are most valuable when communities reap the economic and resiliency benefits.
When communities own those systems themselves, they actually have the ability to control those microgrids as they need for their own purposes.
Oregon's new law requires the State Public Utility Commission to establish clear rules for the operation and ownership of community microgrids, which Cruz believes will expedite their construction. He says while other states have considered moving in this direction, Oregon is the first to take this step.
This legislation is the most ambitious, comprehensive legislation in the country of its kind.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The fire crew from Asotin County Fire District Number 1 put down a grass fire Saturday night at Clarkston and kept the fire to 1 acre. The fire, which started before 9 p.m., threatened several homes. There were no injuries. Asotin County Fire District Number 1 Chief Noel Hardin wrote on Facebook, "We were fortunate the wind calmed down before this fire started. If it had been 2 hours earlier, it would have been a whole different fire. The cause of the fire is under investigation." The 8,000-acre Hope Fire between Kettle Falls and Northport, Washington, was 75% contained as of last night. Level 1 and Level 2 evacuation orders remain in effect, and some roads are closed in the area. The fire started July 8th, and its cause remains under investigation. Crews completed 2 tactical burns on the northern edge of the fire Saturday. 400 firefighters continued to work on the fire Sunday. Fire Information Officer Guy Gifford said, "Overall, the fire is going really well. Crews are mopping up. There's really not much to say." Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather. 20% chance of showers between 8 p.m. and midnight. Otherwise, mostly clear, low 58 tonight. Sunny, high 94 tomorrow. Partly cloudy, low 60 Tuesday night. Mostly sunny and hot, high 96 on Wednesday. Slight chance of thunderstorms after 5 p.m. Wednesday night, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m. Then a slight chance of showers before midnight. 20% chance of precipitation, partly cloudy, low 62. And a 20% chance of showers after noon on Thursday, otherwise mostly sunny, high 93. Currently 88 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ, there's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. And once again, we gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP. 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman Community Radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Noise filters coming up. And after the noise filter segment, Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Music begins in earnest, 7:30 p.m. with Bex's show, Spotlight. Chia Pets in to play music for you, 9 to 11. And at 11 o'clock, we'll have Nardwar, the Human Serviette radio show. Stay tuned.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.